Welcome to Highly Questionable, the show that very rarely covers hockey, and today, for that, I'm thankful. I am noted Bruins fan Katie Nolan. We've got Sarah Spain, Pablo Torre. Let's talk about anything else.
Wait, what happened? What happened in the game made us do a formal open about?
Go New York Saints.
Is Michael Malone right to call out the Nuggets for quitting?
Okay, Nuggets, Suns, it wasn't the best showing on behalf of the Nuggets. And after the game, Michael Malone said as much in so many words.
I felt we quit tonight, which is something you never want to see. So I guess for game three, I'm just going to try to find guys that will at least go out there and leave it all on the line. I may have a hard time coming up with five guys that fill that, but these two games, these second halves, have really been disappointing, and that's an understatement.
So the question being, is he right? He's not wrong in his sentiments. They are not going to win if they play like this back in Denver. The thing that the Nuggets are lacking and that they struggle with the most is their defense. And you're not going to win games if you're scoring 98 points and your defense isn't that good. In the series against the Blazers, they were scoring like 120, 128. 98's not going to cut it. And the thing that I think was so frustrating about this game was to watch situations in which there was a clear, obvious decision to be made where, let's say, Austin Rivers had the ball and Jokic was open and being guarded by Chris Paul. And instead of passing the ball to Jokic, the MVP as of that moment, he was trying to make a three that then didn't happen. The same thing happened with Campazzo. It's like the team, when they lost Jamal Murray, everybody needed to step up. But it felt like they heard stepping up to mean like throw up every shot because they all got a hit, instead of meaning like focus and be the team that you are without Jamal Murray. And that's where I think Michael Malone may not have necessarily been right in the way he communicated it. And look, he's the coach of the team. I'm not. So I don't actually know. But I do know from working in office environments and restaurants that people are managed differently. Not everybody responds to the same type of management. And so there may be people on this team who don't feel motivated by being told that they suck in front of a bunch of people. It's not the thing that makes them want to get out there and do it for the team. And I just hope, I'm really hope, I live with a Nuggets fan and I'm trying best to remain as positive as
humanly possible. This is therapy right now. This is not, you're not doing television.
They will win the series. You guys go.
Yeah, it felt like Katie was trying to give the motivational speech that she wanted Michael Malone to give. And by the way, Michael Malone is not Ted Lasso. He's on edge. He's a good coach, but he's not that guy. In fact, I know that because Ted Lasso doesn't get mad and insist that people call him Theodore Lasso, as Michael Malone did to Cassidy Hubbard the other day. But here's the reality of why there are limits on motivation like this. The fact is the Suns are a better constructed team. What Michael Malone cannot say beyond, you know, the last-ditch motivational effort of you guys quit, let me shame you into being better, is they have more guys on the Phoenix Suns named Cameron than we have real point guards. They have dudes who are currently, in Chris Paul, I believe on a 53-4 assist-to-turnover ratio run in this five-game winning streak, 53-4. And they don't have Jamal Murray. They're starting, as Katie alluded to, Campazzo. And Campazzo is a dude who was not in the NBA before this year. He's like a 30-something-year-old rookie. That's who they're putting out there against one of the greatest point guards of all time. So the fact that they have Jokic and they're underutilizing him, yes. The fact that Aaron Gordon needs to be better, yes. The fact that they slowed down when they're getting blown out, yes, that's a problem, but this feels like something you say when you have nothing else to say because you know your team is just worse.
Well, you say it if you think it's going to motivate your team. And I think that while I understand where you guys from the outside will say this isn't what you do, this isn't how you get guys going, I think it's clear that Michael Malone believes that this is what his team will respond to. And I think he is right. We just saw another example the other night in the Jazz, who got down by as much as double digits, who looked like they were being outmatched by the Clippers. And we actually had a mic on Donovan Mitchell to see what the mindset was in the huddle for that team throughout the game. And at every point it was, listen, they're coming off a game seven. They're tired. If we hit them in the mouth here and we come at them and they fall behind, they're going to shut it down and get ready for next game. Hey, here we go. We're not going to get anything from them in the next couple games. This is the one we need to grab. You're listening to him continue to be a leader in that squad and say, whatever amount we're down, we got this. And you didn't see that from the Nuggets. You didn't see a sense of urgency. You saw a lot of heads being hung low. You saw a lot of coming on the second half, getting hit hard, and then believing that the game was over and shutting it down. So I don't blame him for saying it, because that's what we were looking at. And I don't blame him for thinking this is the right way to handle it. I mean, Mike Budenholzer said the exact opposite about his team after they got blown out, because the Bucks are fragile. The Bucks need you to hold their hand and tell them everything's going to be okay. What the Nuggets need, per Michael Malone, who's the coach and been there for a while, is I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to make you feel bad about the effort you put forward. And if anything, in the next game, I'm at least going to put out people that are going to make it look like this matters to them.
Those were really good answers, guys. Can you both just say something like Nuggets in seven really loudly for me?
Yeah, probably not, no. Because to your point earlier, you know, even though Jamal Murray was never really a traditional point guard in the same sense as Chris Paul, he did bring the team together to rally around a game plan.
But if I could just get the audio.
It's been a while without Jamal Murray, but despite that, they still haven't really figured out how to live without him.
Nuggets in seven.
And they should by now, especially when they have an MVP-type player in Jokic that they're just not using the right way. And when you look at the way the pick and roll of the Suns has been dismantling.
Totally. Sarah, totally. 4-1
ratio between turnovers and assists. I can't say it is what I'm saying. I wouldn't be able to say that.
I'm going to be honest with you. I quit on this segment like 30 seconds ago. Yeah.
How much confidence do you have that the Bucks will put up a fight tonight?
Not much. Honestly, because here's the thing. Game one happened. You lose Harden at the beginning of the game, and then it doesn't make much of a difference. And after that game, the narrative was the Bucks saying, we got to move the ball around. We got to pass the ball. We got to make them work for it on defense, extend the possession, yada, yada, yada. And then they came out in game two, the Bucks, and they did the same thing. Like it didn't change at all. And so look, I am the positive ray of sunshine who wants to look at the bright side for any team that's struggling out there. And I am absolutely trying my best. But it's hard to think that the Bucks identified what their problem was after game one and then continued to do that in game two. Is that because they didn't implement the strategy they knew was the right one, or is it because they have difficulty implementing that strategy? I feel like if they do it again in game three, we'll know the answer to that question a lot better. The Nets are a very good team. I know a lot of the talk about them this season has been either related to Mina Kimes' random fandom or to the fact that there's the big three. And obviously now Harden is out. He's not playing tonight. And I would imagine if I'm Steve Nash, I'm not rushing him back anytime soon, because they don't need him at this moment in this series if it's going to keep going this way. KD and Kyrie combined to either assist or score 80 points, and the entirety of the Bucks scored 86. So it's like they're a very good team. There isn't really an answer for Kevin Durant on defense. It all makes sense logically, but it's like, don't tell me you know how to fix your problem and then continue to not do it, because then I'll just date you.
Nailed the dismount. Yeah, I mean, the issue here isn't just the talent, which is incredible on the Nets side. It's the coaching. And listen, Mike Budenholzer has been under the spotlight for the last couple years of not being able to translate regular season success into the playoffs. And it's become quite clear in this series that that criticism is warranted. Coming out in zones that the Nets can shoot over the top of, allowing the defensive strategies of the Nets, whose biggest flaw all season long was their defensive prowess or lack thereof, to dictate your style of play. When Blake Griffin was the primary defender on Giannis Antetokounmpo, his shots were averaged 4 feet further away from the basket. And then he got so, you know, self-insecure about his free throw shooting that he just stopped driving altogether. So you're taking a team where your only real benefit is your ability to pound it in the paint. And you are letting them move you out of there. They shot 21 fewer shots in the paint in game two. They had 20 fewer points in the paint in game two. This is a team that is letting the Nets dictate to them how they're going to play their game. And the question that I have that I'm most curious about, because unfortunately it feels like this series might be over, is are the Nets significantly better defensively now because it's really just a matter of effort and they didn't care that much in the regular season and this is what they can really look like when they put the effort in? Or is this the result of terrible game planning from Budenholzer that is allowing them to look all world? You meet them in the next round, and all of a sudden, we don't think this is the start of the Nets dynasty anymore. We start to really see the flaws that we looked at in the regular season that had us concerned about them going all the way. That can't be answered until this series is over, which, to the question that was asked, is going to be pretty soon. Because unfortunately, the talent that the Bucks have is pretty good. The coaching is letting them down, and the Nets are going to run all over them again.
Well, that's why I do have a weird amount of faith in the Bucks still, for actually the same reasons that Sarah has very little. It's because, number one, the Bucks have talent, and that feels like they have potential. Like, they are underperforming so comically right now that it feels like the pendulum has to swing back. The fact that the Nets defense is this good, they've won these two games by a combined 47 points, that can't sustain, right? And I say right plaintively looking at the sky because I'm somebody who does not want this to be a foregone conclusion in general, because we don't have a team that is a tier unto itself in this postseason, or so we thought once James Harden got injured in the way that he is currently injured with his hamstring being so tight. I believe that's the medical characterization of it.
Yeah,
so for me, I wonder, like, okay, Vegas right now, for instance, has the Bucks as a 3.5-point favorite at home. Part of it, I think, is because of all the reasons I said, pendulum swinging back. The other reason I have to believe is that Giannis isn't going to show up to the game wearing this.
Huh. What the?
Is it?
That was his game.
Taking a picture of its
happening.
Ruxpin?
Is
up next on HQ.
So today it's my distinct honor to present Nikola Kokic, I'm sorry, of the Denver Nuggets.
Tonight on ESPN, Game 2, Clippers and Jazz.
Okay, yeah, Jazz are up 1-0 in the series, but Rudy Gobert, your defensive player of the year. Also, Donovan Mitchell in game one had 45. Here is a clip of Quinn Snyder in that game coaching Mitchell up.
This is where it's at. You know what I'm saying? You just keep getting your mind right, and it overcomes everything, just like you're doing. Okay, let's go. Do it on D, it'll happen on O.
I mean, I've been saying that for years. Do it on D and it'll happen on O. He also sounds like that insurance guy who's like, I'm your car. I'm a distraction. Whatever that was, that Progressive? Pablo, are you intrigued?
I could not be more intrigued by Quinn Snyder and what he sounds like. Quinn Snyder has always looked like he says that he wants to kill the Batman. But now I realize that he has like a very strong sense of like, the freeways in Los Angeles, I think. He has many opinions on the 405 is the vibe I get from Quinn Snyder now, which is an amazing combination of people.
I feel like everybody in LA has that vibe. Sarah, are you intrigued?
Yeah, he's actually giving me more of the head meditation expert at a resort in Utah. Like,
okay.
If you just get your mind right, and like, if you know like where you are, and you know where I am, and we know like where we all are, like we're gonna be okay, man. That was the vibe I got from that. And by the way, I'm here for it. Like all of the mic'd up sound from that game made me even more of a fan of this team. And I don't know what the question is, but I'm intrigued by all of it. I need all the mics and I need all the conversations because Donovan Mitchell, I think, already has more or as many 40-point playoff games as Karl Malone. Like this guy shows up in the biggest moments, and hearing him work through it and talk to it with his teammates has been awesome.
Mayhem. Yes.
Thank you. That's
mayhem.
I would
I've
love
never
him,
said
yes.
the word mayhem.
You've
I've
never
said
it in your
mayhem.
Life?
Mayhem.
Mayhem.
Say mayhem.
Wait.
What's happening?
Mayhem? You've been saying mayhem as
yeah.
in.
I know how it's spelled, but the way you say it is just, wow, this entire intersection is mayhem.
Mayhem.
No one says mayhem.
Unless that intersection is a truck that's turned over full of ham.
You guys
it
say
is
mayhem?
Not mayhem.
Sarah, I don't mean to be, and if I'm wrong, I'll admit it, but I think literally everybody says mayhem.
Tonight on TBS, The Cube.
Yeah, you've probably seen ads for this if you're watching any basketball. Dwayne Wade is hosting a new game show called The Cube. Feels like a missed opportunity for Ice Cube, but we like Dwayne Wade, so let's see how he does.
I'm Dwayne Wade, and this is The Cube. 15 feet of steel-edged plexiglass standing between you and a quarter of $1 million. With cutting-edge technology, high-pressure gameplay, and a mind of his own.
I'm not here to make friends.
Whoa.
What?
To defeat me, you need nerves of steel.
You'll have 9 lives to beat 7 games. And if the cube is too much for you...
I can't believe I did that!
You may choose to get an assist from a world-class all-star athlete.
I'll try and beat the game for you.
I have confidence.
What?
Well,
you got no choice now.
What?
You only have one shot.
Talk to me nice. He's just worried someone's going to win that $250,000 jackpot.
That would be highly improbable.
But not impossible. Who has what it takes to beat The Cube? June 10th on TBS.
Who is this Cube? And what does he want from us? And why wouldn't you always go, yeah, I'm going to have Dwayne Wade do this one instead of me? Sarah, are you intrigued?
This has real, like, got a new board game. Let's sit with the family and play. Let's look at the rules. Oh, no, they're 80 pages long. Let's just play Scattergories again energy. I don't know, like, what they're playing. It's the cube is apparently somehow anthropomorphic and is also in charge. But so is Dwayne Wade. But you're playing games and answering questions, and there's a board, and there's high-tech, cutting-edge technology. I don't get it.
I don't understand what's confusing about everything you said. Made perfect sense to me. Pablo, are you intrigued?
I am intrigued. I want to find out what about the cube made that sock into a hamper game happen that seemed to be less sophisticated than the cube would suggest. Also, very mad about this. Cuba Gooding Jr., I think. Probably really, really mad.
Also, would have been a good
host
one.
This show.
Would have been a really good. I just don't understand what the cube is other than negative space. There's nothing in the cube until they put stuff in the cube. So is it like an oxygen rich environment? Is it oxygen deplete? What does the cube bring to the table other than just...
I think it represents the barriers and limitations that we put on ourselves that
are
physically there. They're manifestations of our own.
I don't need that. Yeah. I want to see somebody try to put their socks into a basket. I don't need it to happen in this metaphor. All right, folks. I mean, you can tell, I can tell, it's over. We did it. Gave you a show. If you want more Sarah Spain, you can find her on the radio, Spain and Fitz, or you can listen to her podcast. That's What She Said. Pablo Torre also has a podcast, just like all of you and also your mothers. His is called ESPN Daily. Mine's called Sports. There's a question mark. Yay, podcasts.
You're here to make friends.
It's over, right? We're done with the show. That's it now. Please.
I'm the Cube.